Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got Cruz. 35, 30.
Logan intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants.
Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live, presented by DraftKings, right here on Giants.com. Joined by Lance Meadow, I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513, hashtag Giants Chat on Twitter, if you want to talk that way. We're on Twitter for the first 5 minutes of the program, and then as soon as we say goodbye, you can go directly to Giants.com. We'll be joined by the analyst for Baylor Radio, J.J. Joe, who will give us a lowdown on one of the best draft classes out of Baylor that I can remember, and we'll get a lowdown on them as we move forward here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. Lance, good afternoon. How are you?
I'm doing well. How's things with you?
Everything's good, Lance. And obviously the draft is coming fast and furious. Not a whole lot of news the last couple of days. But this is when teams are starting to get back into their war rooms and finalize their boards for the next, we're looking at 16 days before the first night of the NFL draft.
Well, I would assume, I mean, based on how the process plays out, I think that most teams, if the draft was tomorrow, they would know pretty much who they were going to select.
Disagree.
At this stage.
Absolutely disagree.
I think the majority of them, at least, have a good idea.
They haven't reconvened since Pro Days yet.
Well,
a Giants scout hasn't set foot in this building for 2.5 weeks.
Well, that's the Giants. I'm talking about most teams. I said
okay.
Other teams.
Well,
I think a lot of
teams are probably on the same schedule.
Yeah.
I know the Cowboys scouts, for example, didn't show up till a couple days ago.
But I think that at least they have an idea of who they're going to hone in on in terms of their top prospects.
Well, I think they have basic rankings, but I don't think they've had their war room conversations yet where they're like, well, you know what? If player A is there and player B is there, which one of the two are we going to take?
Well,
I think those are the conversations that happen over the next couple of weeks.
Well, and obviously if there's any trades that take place, obviously that's going to shake up the conversation too. But I would think that if you'd ask most teams, I mean, they pretty much would know the five guys in the ballpark when they select of who they probably would settle on in the event that the draft played out tomorrow.
I think that's fair. I think they have their, you know, their tiers and their rows, however they do it, you know, roughly set up. But I think the fine-tuning, and you really get down to the nitty-gritty here, you know, one player with a, you know, 6.7 ranking versus another player with a 6.68 ranking, you know, then you put need into the equation. Remember, I think now you're going to start getting the coaches looking at these guys a little bit closer too. So you get some more input from the coaches now at this point rather than just what the scouts say. And this is when all the information comes together and they kind of figure out, you know, who is the right guy with the right skill set that's also the right fit for this particular spot where the team happens to pick in the draft.
Well, and the coaches have been scouting these guys on film for the majority of the last few months. I mean, at least on their own in terms of who they think, you know, perhaps would be a good fit for the team. Now it's a matter of everybody coming to the same table and determining, you know, who's on the same page with which player. But, you know, the rankings and these mock drafts, they fluctuate by the day. But, I mean, even the mock drafts, we're starting to get at least a little better gauge of where most people think players are going to wind up.
And I think we're still in the fishy portion of the mock draft season. And by that, I mean, at this point, guys are being forced to do these mock drafts every week. And I think sometimes just so they look different, guys will mix it up and try to come up with some creative things to make their mock drafts be a little unique compared to what they've done before. But I think once you get to, you know, inside 10 days before the draft, that's when you really start seeing these things solidify. And like you said, we have gotten some, you know, common cause between these drafts here in terms of who the top five or six position players are, who's probably going to be there for the Giants, but most importantly, who probably isn't going to be there for the Giants when they pick at 10.
Well, I was going over the Casserly mock draft yesterday with Paul, and, you know, clearly he had Miles Jack falling to the Giants at number 10, but it just goes to show
you. People are not
you,
helping my cause, Lance.
Well, of course, it just goes to show you, though, how much there's a differential between opinions, because the other three colleagues of his who are listed on NFL.com who have those mock drafts have Miles Jack. Yeah. They had four. The one that I looked at yesterday, they had four. They had, Brooks,
but
Daniel,
I mean,
Jeremiah.
Those guys, they had them off the board at either five or six, I bet, right?
In that ballpark, I think it was 5 through 7 they went
right. In
the other three drafts other than Casserly. You know, so clearly there's one or two players that pretty much fluctuates, I think, and that obviously will shake things up. But, you know, going over Casserly's mock draft, I don't think it's a stretch with what he laid out, but at the same time, I thought he had Stanley rather high. And that, to me, enabled Jack to fall based on his projections. But you see the ones on the right here, they have Jack going much higher.
I just can't believe a team would pick. I don't know. And by the way, if Jalen Ramsey is on the board for the Cowboys, they're picking him over Joey Bosa. I can guarantee you that for you today. So I don't get Cashley's decision there. Stanley to the Ravens at 6. I don't think that's much of a stretch, to be honest with you. I mean, I think when push comes to shove, they're going to pick Miles Jack instead of Ronnie Stanley.
Well, that's what I would assume, too, based on their track record with linebackers and so forth.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They're one of the teams that really value that position, and I think Miles Jack would fit in as one of those inside linebackers in their 3-4 defensive alignment. I think that works for them. That would surprise me, to be honest with you. So, you know, again, I don't happen to see it. To me, the top position guys, and not necessarily in this order, that'll be off the board are Tunzel, Buckner, Bosa, Ramsey, and Jack. To me, those for the first five non-quarterbacks that are going to be off the board, and if somebody breaks into that, I personally would be very, very surprised. I just don't think it's going to happen. Now, quarterbacks might be mixed in there, obviously, but once you get past the quarterbacks, I don't think many of those other guys are going to be left.
Well, the only one that's interesting is Charles Davis has Buckner there going in the top three.
I can see that.
You know, that could be another name that obviously maybe emerges into that top five group.
Well, no, that's what I have. I have Tunzel, Ramsey, Buckner, Bosa, Jack. Those are my top five.
I'm just saying that was the one that differentiated from the Casserly mock draft that he had up there. I don't think he had Buckner up high, if I'm correct.
No, Casserly, Buckner at 3 to the Chargers
as well.
Oh,
he did have 3? Okay, yeah. I thought he had him a little bit lower.
Yeah, most people have Buckner either going to the Chargers at 3. I've seen him to the Ravens at 6. I haven't seen him much to the Jaguars because they play that 4-3 defense, and I think teams want to try to get Buckner onto a team that runs the 3-4. All right, everybody that's watching on Twitter, again, thanks for joining us. You can go to Giants.com right now to watch the remainder of the show. But now on Giants.com, we're joined by Baylor radio analyst J.J. Joe. He joined us on Big Blue Kickoff Live on Giants.com. J.J., it's John Schmoke and Lance Metall up here in New York. Thanks a lot for joining us. How is it down in Texas today?
It's pretty comfortable, about 65 degrees, partly cloudy, so it's doing great down here.
We would sign up for that in a second, JJ, and I think this is one of the best Baylor draft classes I've seen. You guys have some very talented players coming out, and the one guy that, from what I've researched, can be considered as perhaps the most talented player at his position is Corey Coleman at wide receiver. Now, in terms of the system he's coming out of, people would argue maybe not NFL ready, but in terms of a pure athlete, a lot of people believe Corey Coleman might be the most talented wide receiver in this draft. Tell me about him. What do you have from him watching him down there at Baylor? What would an NFL team get in Corey Coleman if they draft him?
Well, I think the first thing you get is you get a kid that's not only supremely talented, he's explosive, he's all of a sudden. He's aggressive, meaning he attacks the ball. But he's a kid that has proven it over the last 3 years that he'll do whatever he needs to do to help the team win. Corey fits anything you would need in a receiver except for probably being 6'1 or 6'2. But the way he attacks the ball with his vertical leap, man, I wouldn't trade that kid for anyone in the country because he gets it done.
JJ, in terms of durability, I know that Coleman's dealt with some injuries, specifically this past season and even earlier in his career. How much is that a concern, perhaps, moving forward?
I think if you're scouting, you're out there and you're evaluating, that's going to be a concern. Corey dealt with, I think, not last year, but the year before that, a little hamstring issue. This year, that wasn't a problem, but he did deal with a couple of small, minor injuries, and then, of course, offseason he had the hernia surgery, so. For Corey, that's always going to be something because I'm going to call him a tightly wound athlete. Not that he's not flexible, but he doesn't have much body fat like most of those guys don't. But he'll sometimes get nicked. And do I think that'll be a significant problem? He never missed. He didn't miss a ton of games at Baylor, but he did have minor injuries that probably is going to cause a little concern for the scouts in the front offices of the NFL.
Now, according to some of the advanced numbers out there, JJ, he did have 10 drops last year for a drop rate of over 10%. Are we talking concentration drops? Are we talking about, hearing the footsteps from the safety drops? Of those drops, how would you categorize them, and is that something you think he can overcome with more reps?
You know, I look at the drop sometimes, maybe a little concentration, because Corey, if you watch any of the games, he attacks the ball well, has great hands. But sometimes, for him, he'll lose concentration sometimes, and that happens. So, you know, for the amount of for the number of targets he got to say have, I think the number used is 10. I wouldn't be too concerned about that because I think that's something that is correctable. But I would say it probably lends itself more to concentration from watching and more so than anything else.
Talking with former Baylor quarterback and Baylor's radio analyst, J.J. Joe, you talked about, J.J., his aggressiveness in pursuing the football, which is probably one of the most notable features when you look at his game. But, you know, in this day and age in the NFL, everybody gets caught up with the size and the height of wide receivers, since most teams like to have, especially on the outside, those big, tall targets. He's 5'11". How much does his aggressiveness in pursuing the football make up for perhaps what he lacks in size? And is that maybe a concern moving forward?
Well, I mean, he's five. I think 5'11 is what we have him listed at. I think that's what he measured at. I think he has a decent body. He may be about 5'11", 190, 195.
Yeah.
I'm not sure what Odell Beckham is, but I don't think Beckham's about 5'11", maybe 6 foot.
In that ballpark.
I may be wrong.
Yep.
He's right there.
Yeah.
He's
you're right there.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So to me with Corey, you have a kid that you can probably slot if you want to, because sometimes early in his career, he moves slot. You can slot him, and you can slot him outside, and he will attack the ball. To me, it's catching radius. For a quarterback and having played the position, if you got a guy who has a good catching radius, where you pretty much can put the ball in any vicinity and he'll get his hands on it, that's more important than size. You know, I know some guys love big receivers, but sometimes big receivers don't give you separation and that's a harder throw, but they use their body well. But with Corey, not only can he get separation, his catching radius is phenomenal, meaning that he can go get it high, he can go down and get it, he can get it outside, he can get it inside. And to me, that's going to allow him not only to be slotted, to slot him, but it's also going to be able to move him outside, which makes him more, that much more valuable, because most guys can play one or the other. Corey can do both.
Yeah, and his overall numbers in terms of athleticism are simply off the charts. Pro day run a 4.37, which would have made him, I believe, the second fastest wide receiver at the combine after Fuller. 129-inch broad jump, 40-inch vertical jump, 17 reps on the bench press. So his athletic numbers off the charts. I want to talk about a little bit about J.J. We're joined by J.J. Joe, radio analyst for Baylor. The types of routes he was asked to run at Baylor. I know there's a lot of hitches, a lot of those quick hits, a lot of goes, some posts, slants. But there really isn't the full route tree down there. How much of an adjustment and how well do you think he can make the adjustment to the NFL where he's going to have to run a much more complicated route tree than what he was asked to run at Baylor?
Yeah, he's going to have to be coached up. And I just say that because Baylor on the outside, Baylor's offense, the way it's designed, it's a lot of fades for the outside guy, a lot of fade stops, sometimes, of course, some slants. Very seldom when you see him run a corner route. Very seldom when you see him run a true dig route. Very seldom when you see him run a what I'm going to call a true on-time post route.
Mm-hmm.
So he'll have to be coached up a little bit there. But I'll tell you, I'll take that, you know, that skill set and that talent base, and then have to coach it up to run a route tree. I have no doubt that kid will be able to, after probably the first year or at least through that first year, be able to get into a route tree and run it crisply. So he will have to be coached up in that regard.
Final question for me on Corey, J.J. Is he considered a good student in the classroom? Do you think he's a guy that can pick up an offense real quickly? Is he going to put the extra time in to make that adjustment to the NFL?
Hey, I do, man. Everything I've heard about Corey has been a wonderful. Great kid, a kid that's going to study good, a kid that's passionate about his craft. He's a kid that, in the 4 years he was at Baylor, you never heard any really scandal, any issue, any behavioral or issue like that. So for Corey, I believe that he's really dedicated to his craft. He'll do whatever he needs to do. He'll pick it up and he'll move forward. So, you know, it'll be different for him. It really will be different because Baylor's been in that offense, and that offense, you know, after being in it for 4 years, is not as I'm going to say complicated for the guys, but. Corey has no problem putting in the time, and I think he'll be a fine pro.
J.J., they also have another wide receiver at Baylor who obviously is considered one of their top prospects, Jay Lee. He has, at least according to what most of these experts have said, you know, better size and speed combination for a typical NFL wide receiver, but maybe not necessarily the same amount of hype and consistency as Coleman. What's the upside for Jay Lee? You know, where do you think he'll end up perhaps when it comes to an NFL career?
You know, Jay Lee, not to compare him to a Hall of Famer, but to me, Jay Lee was Baylor's Steve Largent. I mean, Jay Lee he ran very great, good routes. He was a good route runner. He was going to be where he's supposed to be. And he just made the play. He just made the catch. when they needed him. He wasn't, you know, he wasn't going to be the explosive guy. He wasn't going to make the circus catch. They left that to Kady Cannon, Corey Coleman, and others. But Jay Lee, to me, has great size. He probably doesn't get the separation that Corey gets, but he runs a very good route. He's where he's supposed to be, and he'll make the grab. So I think for Jay Lee, because he, I think he ran probably like a, either a high 4.5 or a 4.6, I believe, if I recall correctly. You know, he'll probably go late or either have to go undrafted. But I have no doubt that someone will take a look at him. That if he doesn't make a team, he'll probably end up on the practice squad, because I think he has a great skill set that could work out for any NFL team.
All right, I want to flop to the defensive side of the ball with you, JJ. I want to go to the defensive line. This is one of the deepest defensive line drafts that I think we've seen in a long time, especially the big guys in the middle. And Baylor's got one of them in Big Andrew Billings at 6'1", 311 pounds. Give fans an idea of the type of player and guy Andrew Billings is.
I mean, Billings is a superb football player. That's all I can say. I mean, he's an athletic kid. He's got power. He's got strength. He can move. He's quick. He's the type of kid that, you know, in high school won the powerlifting state championship. I mean, they played him a lot at one technique. Sometimes they play a lot of three down linemen as well at Baylor. But this kid, I've seen this kid toss linemen in one game, and then in the same game chase down a running back 50 yards down the field on an angle. I mean, and he wasn't moving slow. So, I mean, Andrew Billings, I think, will go into the league. And if they use him right, I think he's – I mean, in my opinion, I think they need to play him at the three. But, I mean, he can be a one technique. Because I think he's probably 6 foot, 6'1",
yeah.
2, you know, 295, yeah. He may be 300, a little over, you know. But he's a fantastic football player. And he can – I mean, he plays with power. He plays with speed. He plays with explosiveness.
Well, you just mentioned that he has some versatility. When defensive tackles come into the league, sometimes you wonder, well, you know, they were able to get sacks in college. They were able to stop the run. You know, will that consistently transfer over to the NFL? When you were to evaluate J.J. Billings' play against the run versus his play as a pass rusher, are they even, or is there somewhat of a separation and disparity between the two?
I would say that he, you know, he was asked at Baylor, based on my evaluation, it looks like he was asked at Baylor so much not to just attack the quarterback, to read and react. Now, that's my opinion. I'm not sure. That's just what it looked like. But for Billings played a lot of one, meaning that he got chipped a lot. I mean, a lot of times he was going to get some center and he's going to get a little guard from either side. Matter of fact, that's how he got hurt. I mean, Kansas State, the guard chipped him. I think the center chipped him. The guard went low on him and he got twisted up. But I think for Billings, because he has such athleticism that if he's coached right, he will be one of the top interior pass rushers because he has that first step and he is just as strong. He uses leverage real well. But I think for him, you know, if you put him at the three, he'll play the run well as well. You put him at the one, and then if he has to fight, you know, 300-pound guards in a center that's 295, he may be challenged in the NFL. So I really think it's pretty even for him, both his ability to stop the run and rush the passer. But I think he can be coached up a little bit better on rushing that pass.
Well, speaking of being coached up, I was reading, J.J., compared to other prospects, he's fairly young. I mean, he just turned 21 last month from at least a maturity standpoint. I mean, you mentioned what you've seen on the field. What about off the field? You know, where does he compare to, you know, some maybe more older, polished players entering the league?
Yeah, that's why I was hoping he'd come back. As a Baylor guy, you know, I want to see that guy come back. But, hey, I understand. Hey, look, I understand for these guys, man, go. You know, especially if you can go young like he is, go early. Now, Andrew, you know, Andrew is a guy, you know, there's some kids that come into a program and they're mature. And I don't mean they're old men. I mean that they just kind of know how to tend the business.
Yeah.
And Andrew's one of those guys. He's just one of those guys that tends the business. He's not really distracted easily by a lot of the stuff that, you know, most of us college kids got caught up in. He wants to do his work, he wants to do his craft, and he just wants to do it again the next day. Not that he didn't have fun. I'm sure he had fun, but to me, Andrew at 21, you know, I think it's the best thing for him because he is so mature already. I think physically he's ready. And then I believe for him to get in the league early, and if he can stay healthy, that'll lend itself for him to have a very long career. But from a maturity standpoint and putting in the time, I think Andrew will be fine because he's just one of those types of kids.
I'm going to slide out now. We're joined by, again, J.J. Joe. He's the color analyst for Baylor on radio. I want to move out to the secondary, talk a little Xavien Howard for a second, JJ. He's a guy that I've seen all over draft boards. I saw a couple reports this week that he might sneak into early second-round conversation. Other people think he's a day three pick. His production at Baylor is off the charts, 9 interceptions his last 2 years, 23 pass breakups. But at the same time, he's also given up some big plays. Is it fair to describe him as boom or bust or feast or famine, depending on the play?
Yeah, I was saying, I know people may think I'm jaded because I'm a Baylor guy, but for me, Xavien Howard, when he ran at the combine, I was disappointed. I think he ran a high 4.5, maybe 4.6. But when he came back to Baylor at Pro Day, he ran what I thought he would run. I think 4.41. He ran a 4.4 something.
Yeah, 4.41.
Yeah, 4.4. And that's Xavien. When I 4.6, I didn't know what was happening. So to me, Xavien is what you want in the corner. Xavien is about 6'1". He has good size and good speed. And Coach Bennett asked him to play man-on-man coverage, press, and you got this guy. You know, it was man-to-man, and it was most of the time that was probably 80% of the game. So when you play like that, you're going to give up some big plays. I mean, it's just the way it is, especially in the Big 12, when they're throwing the ball probably 45, 50 times a game, you're going to get beat a couple times. So to me, Xavien was asked in college to play man-to-man coverage 90% of the time, and he put up stats that I think you've just mentioned. They were fantastic stats. So for me, Xavien, if he goes day three, he's a steal. I mean, goodness gracious, if he doesn't go day two to me, I think that someone's going to get a steal at day three, simply because I believe he has the raw material at his size, the speed, the athleticism, the agility to be a top corner in this league for 10 years. I'm not saying he's going to be the best corner in the league for 10 years, but, you know, if you can get corners, you need corners in today's league.
Yeah.
And he's one you need to go get.
Absolutely, especially since you probably have three corners on the field more often than not as opposed to the extra linebacker. And when you take into consideration his ball hawk skills, that makes him even more attractive. With that being said, JJ, the other stat that at least raises some questions, in the last 2 seasons, 14 pass interference calls, 5 holding penalties. How much does he need to clean those types of things up to perhaps get to the level of play that you're talking about?
Yeah, no, no doubt. He's going to have to really, really, really improve his technique. You know, and that's all guys. I mean, Xavien came out early. He had an extra year of eligibility, so he's going to have to clean those things up. And I'd like to say this. I mean, in the scheme that Bennett ran, and I'm not sure if you guys have him on. I mean, he had these guys playing a lot of press man, and they were going against some kids who could go. I mean, you got Doxson in that league. You had some of those Oklahoma receivers. I mean, early, you know, and you had some of those guys
Shepherd.
Who could really go. So
yeah.
Yes. So, I mean, he was usually guarding the best guy, and he got caught a lot. I mean, you know, you got to get away with some stuff, and you don't get away with it. So, from a technical standpoint, when he's going to have more of a mix of zone and man, being able to take a break every once in a while, I think that'll help Xavien. But he will have to improve his technique to get to that level. But I have no doubt that kid, he has the raw material to do that with no problem.
All right, and the last guy I want to touch on, and then we'll kind of let you give us anybody else you think we should keep an eye on, is Sean Oakman. Let's put the off-the-field stuff aside. We'll ask you about that in a second. But first, as a player, 6'8", 290, body beautiful, as NFL scouts like to say. Your impression of Sean Oakman as a player heading into the NFL?
Yeah, to me, Sean Oakman will be the one that I think from a technique standpoint will improve the most once he's gotten that NFL coaching. To me, Sean, a lot of times play too high, but, you know, that's not hard. If a guy's 6'8", 6'9", that's the risk you run. I mean, he plays high a lot, and that allows a lot of linemen to get up under him, control him a little bit more than you expected. This year, this is my opinion, this year I felt that Sean played with the weight of supposedly being the top draft pick and the play of the year. It seemed to me like the previous years he played with more of a passion. More of I just want to play, so he just went and played. This year, to me, it seemed like he played with, you know, I got to live up to expectation. And not that he had a bad year. I mean, he had a solid year. I think if you asked him, he didn't have the type of year he wanted to have. So I think for Sean, to me, he has the blank. I mean, he has just the basic skill that the NFL is looking for. He has the size. He has athleticism. He has, I think, everything that an NFL team would want. But for me, for Sean, the question will be if he goes early, which I think he'll probably be after a second-round guy, maybe a third-round guy now, I think he'll be better being drafted later because he'll have a chip on his shoulder. I think if Sean was drafted in the first round, playing with that expectation may hinder him early, and then he would be better late. So I think for me, Sean, fantastic player, great talent, but I want to see him go. I mean, I don't want to mess with the man's money, man. I'm telling you, but I think if he goes third round or later, if he just does, I think he'll have a chip, and you'll see the kid that I expected to see last year, a dominant, angry, you know, always trying to improve type of player.
Talking with former Baylor quarterback and Baylor's current radio analyst, J.J. Joe. It's interesting that you threw that out, J.J., because, you know, when I was looking at his junior stats compared to his senior stats, as you just mentioned, you know, the senior stats are not bad, but there is somewhat of a drop-off from where he was as a junior. I'm curious, there was a lot of talk following his junior year that, you know, he was going to be a top 10 pick. What went into him returning, and how much do you think by him returning actually wound up hurting his draft stock?
Well, no doubt. I think after his junior year, I think if he comes out and he tests like he tests, like I know Sean was going to test, I mean, I think he would have been easily first round. Now, where that would have fell, I mean, I don't know. After all the interviews and all that. Coming back, I'm glad he came back. I mean, you know, he caught a lot of the focus of offensive linemen and offensive lines when he came back. But I just feel like that. I mean, I said this on the air one time. I felt like Sean – just, I mean, that expectation, it seemed like you can sense that the expectation they were heaping on him, you know, kind of he was more concerned about that and living up to that. So he did hurt his draft stock a little bit, but at the end of the day, I think this is about the long run. I believe that Sean, because of just his physical talent, if he puts it all together, there's no reason that kid shouldn't play in the league 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, save for injury, because he does have the athleticism. He does have the range. All those types of things that you would want from, say, a guy to play off the edge. The question will be, you know, what is going to push that button for Sean? I think getting drafted a little later and knowing physically he's just as good as the guys going ahead of him pushes that button. That's my opinion.
And just real quick, you think in the NFL, given his size, weight, he would fit better as a 3-4 defensive end rather than a 43 end or a 43-3 technique tackle?
Man, I think he's a 43 defensive end pass rush specialist.
Really?
You
wow.
Know, 34. I really do. I mean, because I look at
interesting.
That's my opinion. I think if you put him, you know, in a 4-3, put him on the end and say, hey, look, I want you to go with the quarterback. You know, I think that's what he can do. I mean, in a 3-4, you know, in a 3-4, you got a 1, you got a 3. Sometimes it depends. Do you want him to stand up sometimes and drop? I wouldn't want Sean standing up and dropping.
No, absolutely not.
No, because of his size. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think you put him at a 43, you put him on the side where he's, you know, mostly going to go up against that tackle and rush the quarterback. I think that's where he needs to be. You know, 34, you probably can scheme some stuff to where, you know, that's what he's doing most of the time. But I mean, that's just me. I mean, a lot of people may be saying 3-4, you know, kind of rush in, but. I just think if you put him in that 43 scheme, like, I'm trying to think about this. Okay, Jason Taylor played he played in a 3-4, didn't he? Was he in a 3-4 at Miami, Jason Taylor?
I think the first part of Taylor's Miami career, I think he was a D-end. Then he was a stand-up guy once Parcells got there, if I remember right.
Okay, so maybe you're right. I mean, I kind of think that Sean could do something like, not that I'm saying he's Jason Taylor.
Right.
Something like they used to ask Jason to do. Jason is about, what, 6'6"? Maybe 260 at 70 at his heaviest, maybe.
Right.
That really went and got the quarterback. That, to me, is what Sean needs to do. And whatever scheme it is that makes that fit, I mean, that's what he needs to do starting out. And then maybe grow into something later, you know, as his career, as he gets a little bit more experience.
And then, obviously, I have to ask you about the stuff that came out this week. We're not going to get into any details. The police are investigating sexual assault allegations. Irresponsible until we know what happened to talk about the details and all that stuff. Were there red flags, though, with Oakman off the field, JJ, before this came up? Were people like, character, I don't know about this kid. Maybe, you know, we got to worry about him. Or is this something that just came out of left field and is a huge surprise to everybody?
Yeah, this is a surprise, really. I mean, there's not. I mean, you know, he had the things at Penn State. You know, he left Penn State. You know, for whatever reasons, that stuff is publicized. But he came to Baylor, and all intents and purposes at Baylor, you know, he just had college stuff. He hadn't had anything significant. This has been the first thing significant. You know, I know Coach held him out the first game for just violating the team rule, but that wasn't anything major based on what I've heard. So this kind of came out of left field, and I know they're still investigating it, and. They'll continue that, and you hate to have it come out for either party, on either side, you know, for the young lady who's alleging this, and he's for him. You hate to see that, but hopefully and prayerfully it'll be handled, and you know, and things will be satisfied, whatever, accordingly, and what truly happened comes out. But this is something that just came out of the blue.
Well, JJ, I guess before we wrap things up, I mean, the only other player, at least, that I see on the list of Baylor prospects is they do have an offensive lineman, Spencer Drango. Certainly his physical attributes are interesting, but in terms of his upside and where he may actually fit in on the offensive line in the NFL, how do you see that perhaps playing out?
Yeah, I see. I mean, Spencer, to me, is a fantastic football player. Spencer is a four-year letterman at Baylor. He's been asked to pass, you know, he's pass blocking all the time. And I know a lot of people say, well, you're throwing the ball so fast half the time, you didn't have to block anybody. Well, you know, sometimes we push that ball downfield and he's holding the block, you know, longer, I mean, you know, a little bit longer. So to me, Spencer, well, he may not be, you know, flashy type, the type that, you know, people say, oh, he's a dominant tackle. is going to dominate for the next 15 years. To me, Spencer Drango will go into the league and he will be a solid, either right or left tackle. In the league for several years. I mean, he has the blueprint. He has the material for that. He has the experience for that, and he's done it for several years in a highly competitive program now. So to me, Spencer Drango, with the size, the experience, will be an NFL player for years.
Well, JJ, I think that pretty much covers everything. JJ.
Unless you think there's someone else that we're missing, JJ. We appreciate the time. Thanks a lot for joining us.
Hey, I appreciate you guys.
Hey,
thanks
great
so much.
Stuff.
Yeah,
awesome
great
information.
Insight.
Great stuff. J.J. Joe, former Baylor quarterback, Baylor alum. Now he's the radio analyst on their broadcast. And really good information there. A lot of kids coming out of Baylor now. And by the way, just a couple of details. He mentioned the Oakman thing with Penn State. He was dismissed by then Penn State coach, now Texans head coach Bill O'Brien, apparently grabbing the wrist of a store clerk. And he was kind of tossed out of Penn State.
Yeah,
for that.
That was in the school cafeteria. He supposedly wanted an extra sandwich or something, and things allegedly got physical. The other thing that happened is actually in the opener at Baylor, he sat out this game this year because he violated team rules. So there have been obviously a few red flags, some track record and trends, and that's a risk you take with a lot of these young guys who have so much upside and athleticism. But, you know, you wonder if the maturity is on par with, obviously, the upside that they bring to the football
field. And in terms of Taylor, I thought about it some more. When he first got there, it was Jimmy Johnson. Jimmy Johnson ran a 4.3. So he definitely played DN for Jimmy and when Jimmy's program was there. But then when they brought in Sperano, when Parcells didn't coach there, but Sperano was a Parcells guy, I'm pretty sure they went to the 3-4 with him. And I think Taylor was still with him at that point. I think that's when he played a little stand-up rush, if I'm not mistaken. But that's just off memory. I'm no Dolphin expert, obviously.
I mean, off my memory, too, I believe that, you know, they had a few different defensive coordinators during his tenure.
Yeah,
a couple. I think it's safe to say that he was utilized in a variety of different ways. I'm just looking up the coaches.
Sperano from 08 to 10. I'm pretty sure he was still with them at that point, right? And then you had Nick Saban there, and that's another Parcells guy. I don't know what he or Belichick guy, however you want to look at it. That's a good question. I'm not sure what they ran
for
Saban.
Cam Cameron was there for briefly when Saban stepped down.
Juan said Jimmy Johnson, though, he was definitely a 4-3 defensive end. Absolutely. And I think J.J. was thinking that I would want to stand up. Oakman is a 3-4 outside pass rusher, not 3-4. I was thinking more of the hand in the dirt, 3-4 defensive end, not a guy that would stand up.
I mean, I think you'd have to put that hand in the dirt.
I mean, the
biggest concern is because he's so big, and it, you know, it's not necessarily a bad thing, but it's hard for a 6'8 guy to get down in a position where he can, you know, drop back in coverage and make tackles and so forth. So to me, it's like, hey, give him the green light, let him go after the quarterback and do his thing.
Yeah, the Oakman, you look at his body type, and I've made this comparison too for DeForest Buckner. Some people have compared Buckner to a Calais Campbell. I think Chris Canty is another guy you can throw in there as a tall guy at that type of size, and I think Oakman kind of fits that profile. And those guys did do a lot of 3-4 defensive end stuff. Fans, don't forget, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings, the daily fantasy sports destination. At DraftKings, you can play as often as you want with no season-long commitment. Go to DraftKings.com, enter promo code CONTACT to play for free today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Let's go to Greg in Virginia. He'll lead us off on line 4. Greg, how are you, pal?
Hey, how are you guys doing today?
Doing great, Greg. How are you?
I'm well. Really enjoyed the interview. Keep it up. You know, I want to call about Andrew Billings.
Sure.
I'm a huge fan of his. I've called about him before. I just love... He's so extremely powerful.
He's a freak.
And
that's a good way to put it.
Explosive. And But I think once you combine that with the leverage, since he's lower to the ground, you know, one of the fundamentals about, you know, trench play is lower man typically wins. And when you combine that power and explosiveness with his already advantage of being so low to the ground, he can create a lot of pressure right up the middle. He's very athletic. Like you said, I've seen the play where he chased down a running back like 40 yards. The guy, he wasn't making that up. It was sort of mind-blowing. And he's mean. He tackles with, like, aggression. And that's pretty much all I called to say. Huge fan of Billings. If we move back a few spots, I'd be really happy with him.
All right, Greg. Well, appreciate the call. And I think there's a chance Billings is there for round two also. I think he's a, you know, late day one pick, early day two pick. Was probably more likely, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I could see that being his radius. I mean, pure strength is pretty much the one thing that jumps out to me. And I know JJ alluded to this. I wrote this down because when I was reading about it, it amazed me. He actually broke Mark Henry, who was in a two-time Olympian, his 1990 Texas prep record, which was 2,010 pounds total. It involved 805 squat, 500 bench, 705 deadlift.
Yeah, because he was a weightlifting competitor in high school,
yeah.
I think, before he got to college, right?
So Billings broke Mark Henry's record in high school. And then, I mean, consistently, if you look at the Baylor numbers, I mean, he was up there in terms of leading the team in tackles for loss as well as sacks. So he did show he could get to the quarterback. Obviously, he could stop the run. I'm always wondering, okay, you did that in college. Can it transfer over to the NFL? For example, Jonathan Hankins. You know, Hankins wasn't even a guy that you expected to get pass rushing out of, John. What happened? All of a sudden, right out of the gates, you know, you had that 7-sack season.
In his
last
second year,
when he was obviously an every-down player. First year, he wasn't involved that much. Then this past year, the numbers dropped off. So I always worry about, you know, can you expect that at the next level? That'd be my one concern.
And, of course, interior pass rush is so important. I thought it was interesting that he thought Billings would be better as a three technique, where you do rush the passer a little bit more rather than somebody that, you know, you put over the center, you shade over the center, and you just say, look, take up a couple blockers here and stop the run. So see how people decide to use Billings. But, again, it's a very deep defensive tackle draft. You know, you got Billings, A'shaun Robinson, his teammate Jaron Reed, Kenny Clark, Vernon Butler. There are just so many defensive tackles out there that are good. Of course, Sheldon Rankins, who's going to be a top 15 pick. DeForest Buckner, if you see him, is a 4-3 defensive tackle, three technique type. Hassan Ridgeway out of Texas is another big guy in the middle. Austin Johnson out of Penn State. There are just Sheldon Day out of Notre Dame. There are just so many. Javon Hargrave, a guy that a lot of people like out of small South Carolina State. Just so many good defensive tackles. It'll be interesting to see where teams decide to pick them, given the depth at that particular position.
Well, just look at over Brugler's draft guide, and we had him on last week. In terms of the number of guys, first/second rounder, he has 7. Vernon Butler's his cutoff guy at the defensive tackle position, by
the
way.
And he has 13 second or third round as well.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. And if you go third to fourth round even, you're looking at more like 20. So, not bad. 201-939-4513. Jerome is in Charlotte. He's up next. Jerome, what's happening, pal?
Hey, hi, guys. I just want to say how much I love hearing from y'all. With the insight and everything, y'all have been, you know, right there at the state with the players and every coaches and everybody. My biggest question is the draft. With number two receiver being needed and the slot corner and the backup to JPP, which order do you think the Giants will address?
Well, in my opinion, this is just my humble opinion, the Giants might think differently. I'm not sure that there's a wide receiver out there worthy of the 10th pick in the draft. I think your best bet for the two guys that are Coleman, the guy we just talked about from Baylor. But again, the fact that he did not run an NFL route tree in college, I think, would probably scare you off at 10. And then you have Laquon Treadwell, a guy who's 40-time in overall play speed, might scare, but he's real competitive going after the football, and his numbers, of course, were great in college as well. So those would be your two receivers. But I think you can do well at wide receiver in this draft in the second or third round and get a good complementary type of possession guy. Michael Thomas, the kid of Ohio State, Tyler Boyd out of Pittsburgh, even the Rutgers kid, LaRue, is a guy that could be a second or third round pick in this draft. In terms of priorities, I mean, I think you got to look at offensive line. The right side of that line, I would probably put one, nickel corner two, receiver, because of the reasons I just discussed. I'd make a day two pick. And then you're looking at depth on the defensive line, I guess. Yeah. But honestly, if you get a really good player at any of those spots, I don't care where you pick them, go and pick them. That's fine by me.
Yeah, I mean, I think you could shuffle up those needs / priorities based on what you said, John. But, I mean, I'm with you. I think all four of those, to answer your question, are pretty much, you know, the targets in terms of the position. One other thing I want to throw out, and I don't think anybody's brought this up, and this goes back to what I saw in training camp last year, in terms of slot corner position and somebody on the roster. Remember, Bennett Jackson, John, they were lining him up in the nickel spot during training camp when he was healthy. Now, you could see that there's value also using him as a safety too. I'd keep that in your back of your mind. I'm not saying that he's the front runner and they're definitely going to use him, but last year they did use him as that nickel corner. Would not cross that and cancel that off the list as an option.
All right, thanks for the call, man. Appreciate it. 201-939-4513. But at the same time, he's learning safety. I see what you're saying. It's an option, but I don't think that's number one option.
Well, I mean, I want him in the safety mix, I'm sure, from a coaching perspective.
Right.
But, you know, if Landon Collins is one of your starters, which we're assuming, there's only one other starting safety. So, you know, let's say hypothetically Nat Burhe wins the other job.
Right.
You still can get Bennett Jackson on the field.
Remember, Bennett Jackson also did come out of college as a corner.
As a corner, correct. So he's got a little bit more versatility and experience. He's somebody I feel like we're grouping him now strictly as a safety because he made the transition. But let's not forget, I think he's an option out of that nickel spot.
Let's go to Marco in Connecticut. Marco's up next. Good point, Lance.
What's up, Marco?
Hey, guys. How's it going today?
Doing well, Marco. Thanks for
what's
you.
Up?
Good, good. I'm doing good. Lance, Bennett Jackson was one of my favorite players last year in camp, and I hope you're right. I hope he can bounce back, and I think he'd be in the mix as well.
Yeah, again, I'll just caution fans, and I have high hopes for Bennett, too. I liked what I saw in training camp, but one, remember, it's just training camp. And two, also remember that this is a seventh-round pick that has microfracture in one knee and a torn ACL in the other. Durability is not even if he's healthy. How much athleticism is left? You know
what
I mean?
No,
I mean,
he's
those
been
injuries
through so
are
much.
So hard. Those are two. Those are maybe two out of the three most serious injuries you can have. You know, with the torn Achilles being another one. So
and he's not working on a trifecta.
No,
so.
Please no.
No.
So I just don't want to put all my eggs in that one basket. You know what I'm saying?
I do. I do. So I'm calling about the draft. I've been thinking a lot about defense and. Over the last few years, when the Seahawks, the Panthers, Broncos, you've seen their depth that they've accumulated over the years. Broncos did a little differently, I think, in free agency, but those other teams, Seattle and the Panthers, were just awesome at drafting a lot of the defense there. But I think with O-line, coincidentally with the new coach here, Solari, they have an opportunity at 10 with Coughlin or Stanley, they could build a little bit of what the 49ers did over those few years when they were really, really big at offensive line with Anthony Davis and Ayupati and those guys. But I'm wondering, guys, what defensive players, if Coughlin or Stanley were on the board, let's say they're both on the board at number 10. I think Stanley could go before him. But if they're both on the board at 10, who are the defensive players that are no-brainers you would take over those two?
No-brainers. I think Miles Jack, Jalen Ramsey, and Lance, please stop me if you disagree. Joey Bosa. I picked DeForest Buckner over those guys, too, and I think that's where my list probably ends.
Yeah, I mean, I think that I would pretty much be in agreement with you. You know, then you're going to get into, like, the Darren Lees and the Leonard Floyds.
The Sheldon Rankins, the Shaq Lawsons, guys like that.
Which I think it's more even with where those offensive linemen are. So, you know, I mean, I could see them going either way. But, you know, the four of the five that John listed. But, you know, also just to ask a follow-up question, Marco, are we under the idea that those defensive players are going to be available at that point based on your hypothetical setup? The ones that John just threw out, are we saying that those are still available or the Shaq Lawsons and the Rankins of the world are available?
No. I think John had the right list of guys. I'm for my own, just to think about that pick, I'm trying to eliminate the guys that I think, hey, these guys are no-brainers. We would take them.
Oh, you know but what? Marco, I got one more. I think I would pick Hargraves over one of those two guys too.
And that's the guy that he's fallen between the cracks with this first tier of defensive players. And then when we get to 10, so you're saying you would take him over the offensive lineman.
Right now, I think I would, yes, but it's very, very close.
But so if the offensive linemen are there with that, they're good players, but that maybe second tier of Lawson, Darren Lee, Leonard Floyd, then I think it's wide open. Would you agree?
I would if it was between right now for me, if it was between those two offensive tackles and those defensive players, I think I'd pick the offensive tackle. And the reason I might lean offensive tackle anyway, I think you have a better chance, Marco, of having one of these corners fall to you in round two that you might be able to play and have some success with than there is having a starting quality offensive tackle be there for you in round number two. That's why I think I still might lean Stanley and or Conklin, but it's close, and I haven't decided yet for sure.
Well, I mean, I would agree with what you were alluding to. We'll let you continue, Marco. Just to piggyback off of that point, I would probably lean towards the offensive lineman over Hargraves, even though I really like Hargraves because, you know, we just heard from J.J. Joe, Xavien Howard. If you could get him in a later round, perhaps.
Or maybe the William Jackson, the third kid drops. Maybe Eli Apple drops. You know, Kendall Fuller, Artie Burns. I mean, there are guys
out there,
corner, that you have some depth.
And I could see even plugging them into the nickel spot if I wanted to start him day one. So I'd be okay with, you know, grabbing one of those guys, whereas I don't think you're going to find a Stanley or a Conklin in the second round or the third round.
No, you're not.
I agree with you. Guys, I'll go. I was wondering if maybe in the next few days or weeks, I'm looking for some information on Scooby Wright, linebacker from Arizona. He was a big-time college player, and his name's fallen off a little bit. I wanted to know if you've heard anything, if you know anything about him. That's about it.
You know, I haven't done a ton of work on Scooby Wright, to be honest with you. I've heard a lot of people don't think he's going to translate well, but I will make it a point, Marco. We're going to have – literally, I've been booking him the last couple of days. We're going to have about half a dozen draft guys on that do national draft stuff over the next you know, I guess it's 12 shows before we get to the NFL draft. And I will make it a point that we'll ask at least one of them about Scooby Wright for you. Happy to help. 201-939-4513. Fans, Big Blue Kickoff Live is brought to you by DraftKings. If you never played on DraftKings, it's changing the way you play fantasy sports. Pick your contest, pick your players. If you win, pick up your cash. Simple as that. DraftKings.com. Promo code CONTACT. Claim your free entry today. DraftKings Fantasy Sports, free to play. Mike in Virginia Beach. He's up next. Mike?
Hey, how you doing?
Hey, Mike.
How you doing?
Doing well, Mike.
Thanks, man. Well, I wanted to talk about the linebacker acquisitions, the kind of the under-the-radar type signings, which is like classic Giants. Guys like Kalika Mitchell, I think was his name.
Kelvin Shepard, you're talking about?
Well, no, I'm talking about I'm saying for a precedence from like
You're talking about back in the day. Okay, I thought you meant the newer linebackers that they just brought in.
Well, yeah, I'm just comparing the moves to as far as Jerry Reese's moves of picking up the low dollar linebackers that are mid-20s.
I love the competition, Mike, that they've created now at middle linebacker, where you're going to have three options. You know, a guy that you know what he's going to give you in Jasper Brinkley, whereas if everything else goes wrong, put him in there on first and second down, let him stop the run, and then you figure something else out in passing situations. You got Shepard, who started last year, is a smart guy. Then you have Robinson, if he's healthy, maybe he can be good against the run as well. So they have a good mix there. Are any of these guys all-pro players, you know, first team, second team, all-pros? Probably not. But I think you have a good mix of guys that you can figure out ways to use them to get the most out of their skills and help the team win some games.
I think one of the big points is that the fact that they put so much money into the interior of the defensive line, those guys are going to soak up those blockers. Those linebackers can come loose. Anybody can come loose, you know, no matter how really good they are.
Which is why you would probably want the guy in the middle that's going to have some speed because he's going to be covered up. You want him to run sideline to sideline.
Exactly. The other thing I was thinking was that with the draft, I can't really pin down too much that the Giants absolutely need that they couldn't get in free agency besides the safety and the right tackle spot. Well, I'm not sure that you rely on a rookie to start at right tackle. I think that was an exception, not the rule. You know, it's starting to sound like the rule, but like, I think that like the free agent or someone from the inside, just stick with Newhouse. I saw the Pro Football or Pro Football Focus had ranking him as like a middle of the right tackle, so we can't really do much better as far as like on the market right now.
I'm not sure if he was a middle of the road right tackle in terms of their rankings, but I think you can get away with starting a rookie at right tackle. I think it's much harder doing that at left tackle.
You can absolutely get away with the right. I mean, think about it. Most left tackles in college wind up, Mike, starting off on the right side. I mean, like a Jake Matthews, for example, with the Atlanta Falcons. You know, he started out on the right side, and then he moved to left due to injuries.
True, but rookies often, even on the right side, do struggle in their rookie year.
They do, but I don't think it's unheard of to at least start out a rookie on the right side. I think there's definitely examples across the NFL landscape where that's actually been more of a trend than perhaps a rare occurrence.
Yeah, definitely. Well, that's all I got. I appreciate that.
Hey,
all
right, Mike. Appreciate the
Thanks
call,
for
Mike.
The phone call.
Good stuff. 201-939-4513. 201-939-4513. Andrew in Stanhope, New Jersey. He's up next. Andrew, what's going on, pal?
Speaking of right tackles, big DeBrickashaw Ferguson, he retired. Maybe he has a couple years left.
No. He retired.
He retired
on his own volition. He doesn't want to play anymore because he can't play to the same level he used to. He's not an option, Andrew.
I saw him in person with his shirt off, and he was kind of unimpressive. Like, it was a contradiction. Like, he's gigantic, and he has, like, a cool-looking, you know, he's tall, but he has a big chest, but he has had very little muscle tone. You know, he was unimpressive as far as I would think he would be more chiseled. I was in the Jets facility before. Speaking of the Giants being, everyone says, a class organization, I was with the Jets for Christmas, like Military Appreciation Day.
Yeah.
And they, you know, they're real unorganized. It was actually the Friday before the Jet-Giant game, so I was uneasy because I was like a spy. I was going to try to call you guys from there, but I was busy. But it's just real. It was crazy, like it was unorganized. And when I went to the J-Fund thing, it was totally different with you guys. Like, it was, you know, the facility with the Jets, like they made me stay in the media room for 2 hours. And, like, one person brings you somewhere, and then they don't, you know, they pass you off to another person. It was just much more disorganized. But I saw a Brick, like, doing an interview. So I guess that was my only question, if you would come back. And speaking of offensive linemen, that's probably off the board, right, for the Giants in the first pick. Or if someone falls, do you think they'll pick an offensive lineman? And if you were the GM and the best offensive lineman was on the board and the best running back, who would you grab, the LSU running back? And I'll listen off air. Thanks, guys.
I appreciate it.
Well, I mean, I would take the offensive lineman, and I wouldn't even hesitate.
I know you wouldn't. Absolutely not. Look, and if Laramie Tunsil's sitting there, you pick him, and you run, and you hide, obviously.
And you say thank you very much to the nine teams
exactly.
in front of you.
And, you know, if Ryan Stanley or Conklin are there, I think it's a serious consideration. I mean, it's just – here's the thing. The question is, well, what I would do and what I think the Giants are going to do are two different questions. And I have no idea what the Giants are thinking. I will say that right now before I make my next statement. I have no idea what they're thinking upstairs. I don't know what the draft board looks like. I don't know what they're going to do. My gut feeling, based on the Giants' drafting history under Jerry Reese, I would be surprised, mildly surprised, if they took another offensive lineman with a top pick. Be 3 out of 4 years. I'd be a little surprised.
Given.
Especially at 10. If they were picking like 17 or 18, I could see it. But at 10, and this is what I've said a lot, the Giants like to get premium players at premium positions. And is offensive tackle a premium position? Yes. But they already spent a premium pick at a guy at that position last year. So my gut tells me they're not going to go in that direction again. But I think it would make a lot of sense if they did.
Well, I think also if you look at, you know, Jerry Reese's track record too, you know, I mean, he values defensive pass rushers too.
Oh, absolutely.
So, that, you know, that's why I constantly have told everybody, you know, regardless of what they did in free agency,
and corners,
John,
by the way,
and
too.
Corners too, I say just because they were aggressive in free agency with the defensive line, if there's a great defensive lineman out there at number 10, do not be surprised. I mean, there's value in having depth because it's all about, and you and I have talked about this, John, you can't look at this draft just for 2016. You have to think about guys who have expiring contracts, JPP, Hankins. You know, you can't assume that everybody's going to stay put.
Yeah.
You don't know what the market's going to look like following this season. So I still put a premium on that defensive line position.
And that's why, you know, people have talked about Leonard Floyd a lot. Based on his skill set and his raw pass rushing skills and athleticism, it does fit the profile. I mean, that is like the Jason Pierre-Paul profile right there when the Giants picked him. Really great athlete.
Overall athlete.
Get to the quarterback. You know, that's the type of guy that he is.
And, freak of nature type of thing.
Was very, very raw when he got here. He didn't play a lot of football. He hadn't.
Barely played high school football.
So, you know, if they think he has the guy like that as the tools, maybe they would go that way. Who knows? 201-939-4513. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Eddie in North Carolina has been holding the longest. Eddie.
Guys, how you doing today? Good
doing
job
well,
as usual.
Thanks, Eddie. Appreciate it. What's up?
Listen, you stole my thunder a little bit. I called a couple of weeks ago, and I think Lance agreed with me.
I disagree.
I think at the start of the free agency, I think everybody thought that it was going to take 2 years for the Giants to fix all their problems. It seems like everybody wants to fix them in 1 year right now, trying to get a right tackle with the 10th pick in the draft, which if you look economically, are the Giants going to pay a tenth pick first-round money for a right tackle? I don't think that's going to happen. You could either pick, you know, a second round is a right tackle, or you could wait till next year because I don't think the Giants are going to be picking 10 next year. They're going to probably be picking in the 20s.
You hope so.
And I would just wait till next year to pick a right tackle. This year, if you wanted to, I know they talk about chemistry and cohesiveness and everything, but you could always move Pugh to the right side. They've signed so many guards. You put Bobby Hart there, one of these other guys that they just signed for this year.
You know,
I don't think you're going to fix all their problems in 1 year.
No, Eddie, I think...
And the guy that I would take, and I live in Carolina, I've watched him a lot, the games are always on. He might not be the best athlete, he might not be a top 10 guy, but what he is, he's a playmaker. He's 275, he reminds me of Michael Strahan, because he could play the run, he can play the pass, you could drop him back in coverage if you wanted to. Shaq Lawson is the guy they have to pick. With JPP being injured, you don't know what you're going to get from him. You could have two guys on either side, Vernon and Shaq Lawson, for 5 years. You need to fix the defensive line this year because you have that 10th pick, and then some of the other things you can fix later on. I wouldn't pick, and the other guy I would not pick in the first round is Hargraves because, you know, if you're telling me that DRC is not going to be here next year, that's another thing. But
no, but Eddie, remember, you need...
You're going to spend top money like that on a slot corner. I don't think I'd do that either, and Treadwell is definitely out the window. You don't spend a top 10 pick on a guy that runs a 4.6.
Well, Eddie, in terms of your point about Hargraves, you know, keep in mind, you know, DRC's had some injury history, and you're not just drafting this corner to be a slot guy. You know, nobody says you can't put him on the outside during your schemes and so forth. So, you know, you may not get a lot of opportunities to play him on the outside in year one. Down the road, he could very well be an outside guy every single down. So I don't look at it just as a short-term investment with a guy like Hargraves. That, to me, would be a lot of upside long-term.
And remember, he's going to be on the field 75% of the snaps based on how offense is set up now with their three wide receiver sets. I mean, the Cowboys' basic formation is 11 personnel, which is three wide receivers, and they usually have Cole Beasley out there and no fullback. And, you know, the Redskins run a lot of that stuff too. And we'll see what the Eagles run now at Doug Peterson. But as you well know from watching the Giants, when you run the West Coast offense, what do you usually have? Three wide receivers on the field. So you're looking at the base personnel packages for two out of the three teams in the division, you know, the Cowboys and the Eagles being 11 personnel, three wide receivers, so you need three corners. So I wouldn't be too wrapped up in that. And, Eddie, thanks for the call. We appreciate it. We're running out of time. We got to go. Thanks a lot. And I think you do make a good point, the first one in your call. Don't just pick a guy because he fits a need for this year. Because as we've talked about before, Lance, rookies a lot of times struggle in their first year. So even if you get him, you plug him in, who knows he's going to play well. Yeah, he'll start 16 games, that's great, but is he going to help you or is he going to hurt you for 16 games? So you pick the guy that you think with your coaching, with your development, in 3 years is going to be the best player. Or in 2 years is going to be the best player, however fast you think it goes. And that's the guy I pick. I don't care what position he plays because, as you said, guys get hurt. Guys leaving free agency. You never know. You find the guy that in 3 years you think is going to be the best football player and you're pretty sure is going to be the best football player. You pick that guy and you come out with a smile. I don't care what he does this year.
I agree with you. I mean, that's why it goes back to the philosophy of best player available as opposed to best player that fits our needs. There's a distinct difference between those two labels.
And also, better, more important than who's better right now. You know, because there might be a guy that you think is going to come in. Like, for example, let's say you're looking at the wide receivers in the class. Just giving the example. Let's say you're looking at the wide receiver class and you're like, you know what? I think Laquon Treadwell is going to step in and he'll be the best wide receiver this year out of all the guys in the class. But your scout tells you that if you get Corey Coleman in here in 3 years, he could be Antonio Brown. But Laquon Treadwell is still just going to be I think of a good name to throw out there as a possession receiver. You think he's going to be, let's say,
Anquan Boldin?
Sure, at best. Right. I think that's a good one. Do you want to pick Corey Coleman that's going to become Odell Beckham, or do you want to pick Anquan Boldin? That's the type of differentiation you want to make, too. Obviously, there's risk involved in all that stuff, but to me, that's how I would figure things out. Final call of the show at 1 o'clock. Christian, what do you got for us?
Hey, how we doing, guys?
Doing well, Christian. What's happening with you?
Good. I'm just worried about one thing here. I seen the Bobby Rainey, you know, the Kelvin Trevor sign. I see that, you know, those are good signings. Bobby Rainey, hey, could have a blow-up season this year. No one knows. But I'm mainly concerned about the safety position. I mean, we got Landon Collins. I mean, he was a rookie last year. And we have, what, Mikel Thompson. We got Cooper Taylor out there. And they were all injured last year. So we really don't have anybody out there to even fill in that slot, because these guys, we don't know what they're going to produce yet. Now, I have a feeling that we should have signed Reggie Nelson, to be honest. I mean, at least 1 or 2 years just to have that veteran back there. Like you said, we don't even have a slot corner yet. So what do you guys think about that?
Well, I mean, pairing a veteran with Landon Collins, I mean, we had talked about this on this program. I don't think that's a stretch by any means. But, you know, I keep saying I think while there are question marks, as you noted, Christian, surrounding the safety class, I think they feel as if they want to give these guys enough of an opportunity, starting in this offseason workout program, all the way through training camp, to emerge, hopefully stay healthy, and grab the job. Dave Merritt, if you have an opportunity to look at some of these interviews, they're online. When he spoke to the media, you know, one guy, John, that he pinpointed, he's very high on Matt Burhey. He's extremely high on Nat Burhey. Despite all the injuries, he liked what he saw out of training camp last year out of Burhey. He has spoken to him via text message all offseason.
I mean, he wasn't on the field much last spring, though. We heard his calf in the spring. He never got on the field.
He did, but the limited time, at least, or the classroom stuff, he feels good about him. Now, listen, Dave Merritt's around these guys more so than anybody else in this building.
Right.
So I'm going to take his word for it that he sees something in some of these guys, even though they do have some injuries. So, like I said, I think the philosophy right now is, regardless of the questions and the health issues, they want to see somebody in-house grab the job before they're going to all of a sudden bring in, you know, 4 or 5 veterans.
And, Christian, I'll say this to you. There will be an opportunity to add another veteran down the road. Is he going to be the caliber of an Eric Weddle or a Reggie Nelson or a Tayshaun Gibson? You know, probably not, though you never know. But I would not be surprised to still see a veteran safety added at some point between now and the start of camp.
Oh, that sounds good. And one more thing, guys. I mean, I've been going all over. I've been trying to look about Victor Cruz to see how his recovery is coming along. And really, I mean, just I've only heard from his point of view that he said, you know, it is. I understand it's the muscle issue. It's not really the tendon or anything like that.
Yeah.
So, but he's saying everything's going well. The recovery's going well. But I'm hearing this from him. I'm not really hearing anything else from any other media. Honestly.
Well, I guarantee
you. What do you guys think about that, too?
I guarantee you next week when Jerry Reese addresses the media about the draft, someone's going to ask him about how Victor Cruz's health is doing. So stay tuned to Giants.com. Is that next Wednesday or Thursday, Neely? Jerry Reese. It's the middle of next week. Check it out. He'll talk on Giants.com. Someone will ask the question, and that'll be our next big update on Victor. You're right, though. We've heard the same thing. And, Christian, thanks a lot for the call that you've heard, that things are going according to plan. I talked to him on an interview on Giants.com. I guess 3 weeks ago now, he said, you know, in 2 weeks he'd start trying to, you know, sprint and all that sort of stuff. So he's progressing. But again, with a guy like Cruz, I also wouldn't push him in the spring here. You know, let him get healthy, let him get better, then give it a couple weeks on top of that. And if he doesn't do anything until the summer, I'm fine with that.
And that was something that Ben McAdoo had mentioned, too, when he spoke to the media down at the owners' meetings. He said, right, we're not going to throw him into the mix. And Thursday, April 21st is when Jerry Reese is going to speak to the media. That's his pre-draft press conference.
And it's really, you should tune in, because he gives all the details of the Giants' evaluation process. He basically gives you the names of the guys they're going to pick. There's a lot of information. He's very forthright.
Oh, a little sarcasm thrown underneath me there by John Trout. You had me there for a second. I was like, I don't know, what is he talking about?
No, but obviously the Giants don't like, as Mike Eisen often writes, Jerry Reese holds the cards close to the vest, doesn't like to give out any hints in terms of who the Giants might select.
Well, but any questions, though, regarding players currently on the roster?
Oh, of course.
That obviously will be discussed.
Yes,
I don't think there's going to be a secretive thing, but, you know, there still is somewhat of an unknown with Victor Cruz, regardless of the update. Because until he gets out on the field and until he starts running routes and getting into physical activity, there's still that question mark.
And until you see him recover from that the next day.
Correct, which was something we talked about last year. He was out on the field, but then you always wondered tomorrow what was the report going to be like. So you really got to wait and see once training camp starts before we know more.
One other quick point, you mentioned Bobby Rainey, and I wanted to bring this up. And I thought about this over the weekend after they announced the Rainey signing. Do you think the Rainey signing is the Giants hedging their bets in case they have to play Dwayne Harris at wide receiver a lot more than they want, so they have another return guy to protect them in the return game if Harris has to be more of a full-time wide receiver?
Oh, I think that certainly is a big part of it. But let's not also lose sight. You know, a guy like Janoris Jenkins, who was brought in, he's got return capabilities. Beckham has return capabilities. Not saying you want to throw these guys into the mix, because then it's Dwayne Harris all over again. You don't want to take your starter away.
Rainey can be the guy that can take over.
Rainey can be your every down kickoff and punt return guy. He's done that. He did that with Tampa Bay. He led the team in both categories.
And he's good at it.
Correct. He's explosive in that. I think he's also a very good receiver as a third down back. To me, Rainey's,
you can back up Vereen a little bit.
Yeah, Rainey's like a jack-of-all-trades guy. If you keep him on the roster, you know he's going to give you special teams. He can also be that third down back, and he's got starting experience as a running back, and he's worked with Mike Sullivan. So there's a lot, I think, that's attractive from Rainey, but I think you do bring up a good point, and my answer would be yes, that if Dwayne Harris needs to be in every down wide receiver, which is extremely possible, and I think he can do that, then at least you don't worry, hey, Rainey could take over special teams duties.
And then the numbers at running back become interesting.
Yeah,
how many
do you want to keep? Correct.
And then that's a whole other situation, which we don't have time to talk about.
Correct.
It's,
and remember, you also have two fullbacks on the roster, too, which also needs to equate into that.
It'll be Lance Meadow and Anita Marks tomorrow. I think Anita's trying to track down somebody from out there in L.A. to talk a little bit about the UCLA prospects. Lance is still working on Oregon. He's trying to get somebody on to talk about DeForest Buckner. You can book him for tomorrow if you can find somebody.
People
in Oregon, apparently very friendly, but they don't. But they're not good with the email correspondence, apparently.
Exactly.
But it'll be Anita and Lance tomorrow, and then I'm back with Lance on Thursday. We're going to have Thursday, I believe, is Rick Saratella, NFL Draft Bible. Then I'm with Feagles on Friday. That's John Ledyard from USA Today, DraftWire.com. So we'll have a lot of guests upcoming this week as we continue to get closer to the NFL Draft. Thanks for joining us. Have a great day on Giants.com. We'll see you tomorrow.
Have a good one.
Well, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go.
He's got through. 35-30.
Broken, intercepted.
Touchdown, Giants!